Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The story of this little 7-year-old boy sent back to Russia has caught the attention of the world, and for good reason. This is a tragedy that has turned into an outrage that is now understood to be just one of the saddest stories that many of us have heard in a very long time. Little 7-year-old boy adopted from Russia, sent back to Russia, alone on a transatlantic airplane ride, and then met there by a guide hired just to pick him up, take him to the Russian Department of Education, where he was handed off with a note that said, "This is a Russian national. I cannot handle him." As one observer said on CNN, this American mother returned this little boy like a pair of pants that didn't fit. And what we're looking at here from an international perspective now is a foreign policy disaster. The Russian Foreign Ministry has shut down all adoptions of American parents until the issue can be settled out, and has put a pall on the entire process of Russian adoptions. Over 3,000 American families have right now some adoption in process of a child in Russia. Russia ranks number 3 among nations of the world in terms of source children for American adoptions. But what we're looking at here is now a situation in which the U.S. State Department is having to act urgently on behalf of those parents to try to keep the adoption process going. And what we have here is, of course, the nation of Russia outraged about this. So let's think about that for a moment. Why wouldn't Russia be outraged? Here you had a child taken from Russia, from an orphanage in Russia, rightfully, lawfully, expensively adopted, taken to the United States with a promise that he would be kept and protected and raised. And instead, he's returned because the mother said he is he's violent and unresponsive and has what she described as psychological psychiatric troubles. But this is far more than that. Obviously, it's far more than that. The Russian people are very much outraged. Their pride is tremendously wounded because given the economic straits and the depression of the Russian economy, given the sociological realities there, the fact is that they have a superabundance of orphans and they aren't able to care for them. And they're largely dependent upon international support and, in particular, parents in the United States who want to adopt those children. So you start adding all this up and you realize there really is a problem here. There's a foreign policy problem. There's a legal problem. The legal problem has been exaggerated in our view in recent days simply because it now appears that this child is no longer a Russian national, but is, because of his adoption, now an American citizen, which puts the U.S. State Department in the position now of having to claim that the child is probably still an American, even though he now has an adoptive parent who tried to return him. Okay, that's the situation the media is focused on right now. And the media focus has been on the fact that this mother should have done something other than what she did. This mother should have come for help. She should have cried for help. She should have turned to social agencies. She should have turned to her church. She should have turned to friends. She should have turned to the U.S. State Department, someone other than what she did in putting the child on an airplane alone, returned to Russia. But the focus of my article published today at albertmohler.com, the article is entitled "When Adoption Fails, the Gospel is Denied," is that what actually happened here from a Christian perspective is unspeakably worse, infinitely worse, because one of the central biblical metaphors for our salvation is adoption. In Romans chapter 8, the Apostle Paul writes, reminding us that our salvation comes down to this: "For all who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God, for you did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God, and if children, then heirs, heirs of God, and fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with him in order that we may also be glorified with him." The bottom line of all of that is that when you ruin an adoption, and there's no other word for what happens here, when you try to reverse an adoption, you try to send the child back, you are actually not only violating the logic and the morality of adoption, you are ruining the picture of adoption as the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because the gospel of Jesus Christ is about God's unmerited love for us, whereby in Christ we are adopted by God himself as his sons, and we are made joint heirs with Christ. That's an irrevocable love. That's an irrevocable commitment. we aren't sent back like a pair of pants that does not fit. And when we try to point to this situation with this child turned back to Russia, and we try to limit the damage of this to the political and the sociological, we miss the point. The damage here is deeply theological. We're going to be talking about that today on the Albert Miller Program. I'd like to know what you think about this and what dimensions of this we really need to consider. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. To read my article, go to albertmiller.com. You'll find the article and the source documents. You can follow there as well. A review of some other issues that have been in the news and the media this week. I wish we had time this week to talk about the cover story in Time magazine. It's one of those cover stories that is almost intentionally, I think, put out there to irritate. The cover story Time magazine this week, should kids be bribed to do well in school? Now, that's what you call a loaded headline. When you ask a question, should children be bribed? That's like asking, you know, should you embezzle rather than pay your taxes? Obviously, the answer is no. Children should not be bribed to do well in school. But when you actually read the article, you discover there's a whole lot more going on there. I mean, there are some parents who might try some kind of economic incentive to do well in school. But what you're talking about here is actually where you have school failure and where you have persons who are not doing well in school. There are some schools themselves that are experimenting with some schemes to reward for certain scores on standardized tests, certain improvement, one test to the other, certain markers, a certain number of books read, and all the rest. You know, here's what I think the bottom line problem is. We do not know what to think of children. And the secular world is completely confused about what to do with children. One moment we're treating them as if they have no responsibilities at all, and no judgment at all, and no mind at all. And the next moment we're treating them like little adults. And so whether we're talking about what they play or what they watch, or the whole educational confusion, the bottom line is the secular world is horribly confused about children. But from a Christian perspective, a child is a child precisely so that the child can learn. The child is an adult in the making. There's a clear distinction between child and adult. The Apostle Paul said, when I was a child, I thought as a child. But now that I'm a man, I think as a man. Clear distinction there. But what marks a child is the need to learn, the need to develop. The Bible is so clear about responsibility to teach a child, to raise a child, to nurture a child, to discipline a child. But you know that one of the things the child needs to learn in the process of that development is what work is all about. And we need to really ingrain in our children the link between investment and reward, between labor and reward. And, you know, that was quite easy when you lived on a farm, because you could say to the child, you take this little area here, you work for us as we're a family responsible for this entire farm. But over here, you can have your own garden. And out of the produce of that garden, you can make your own money. You can do this. You can be hired out to do that. You can go over here. Well, now we live in these sprawling, expanding suburbs and megacities where, let's just say, farming's a very remote issue for most Americans, and children have their own bedrooms with their own iPods and their own televisions and their own computers, and then parents look at a Time magazine article that says, should you bribe your children to do well in school? Let's put it this way. What we need to do with our children is help them to link labor and reward. And it shouldn't be a bribe, but an economic incentive is not always wrong. Parents know that intuitively. And I'm not saying give it cash, but there are certain markers that children should be trained to strive for. And one of the problems is if we just give them everything up front, there's nothing left to incentivize. And if they just get everything up front, if we just make their rooms laden with consumer goods and we fill their lives with all of these things, then they don't have to work for anything. They don't have to strive for anything. They never have the opportunity to link labor and reward. I remember one time my uncle saying to me, "Al, your job, you're a school student, is to get good grades. That's your job. Your dad's job, you know what that job is. Well, this is your job." I never forgot that. It's not a bad metaphor. We want to learn to do well. We want our children to learn to do well. And to call a rightful reward for labor or for work or for investment or for a special job well done, to call that a bribe is really to miss the point. Is an employer bribing his employee to do a good job, or is he incentivizing the employee? And I think Time magazine blew it with the cover story. I think parents know you don't bribe your children, but I think if what they're really getting at here is that you just give children everything and then hope for the best, well, I think that's ridiculous. I think parents know that too. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Interesting story on the Episcopalian Church. There you have also Episcopal dioceses that are suing for their property. And in the court of Virginia, the Virginia Supreme Court this week, that has been adjudicated. It's another reminder to us, I want to be heard very clearly on this. We need to honor those who do the right thing theologically, even if they lose their property. Woe unto the church that says, we're going to forget our convictions, we're going to compromise our faith because we want to make sure we keep the building, the pipe organ, the tall steeple. That is a tragedy beyond description. I hope things work out well in the court, the Supreme Court of Virginia, but I know a church that does the right thing is actually going to win the case in a far higher court. We're going to come back to talk about what happens when adoption fails. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The story of this little 7-year-old boy sent back to Russia has simply captured the American heart, and far beyond America, it has spawned outrage in Russia, and it has really caught the media attention of the world. I did a quick Google News search before coming on here, and I can tell you that news sources all over the world are talking about this because it's one of those stories that just touches the heart immediately. Just imagine a little 7-year-old boy. Let's just paint the picture and understand it. Here you have a little boy who is in a Russian orphanage. He has no hope other than that someone will adopt him and give him what he does not have, and that is parents and a home. He's adopted by an American who brings him to the United States, and he is adopted and made a part of their family. And then they decide they cannot handle him. One of the statements made, by the way, in this news coverage was made by the adoptive grandmother of the boy, who said of her daughter, Tori Hansen, who adopted him, she wanted a child she could love, but she did not find that love in this boy. Well, that's tragic. But putting him on a plane alone, sending him back like he's being returned as a consumer product, and sending him back to the vast bureaucratic orphanage system in Russia is just tragic beyond words. But as I said in the opening segment of this program today, the bigger problem from a Christian perspective is what this says about the gospel. Because the gospel of Jesus Christ comes down to the fact that we are adopted by God in Christ as his sons. And if sons, then joint heirs with Christ. And you look at that reality and you think about how permanent and eternal that is. Thanks be to God. And then you compare it with what this picture has now shown us in its brokenness. And you see a slander against the gospel. A failed adoption is a slander against the gospel of Jesus Christ. The secular world should not be expected to see that, but Christians had better see it. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. John's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Well, first, I'd like to make a comment. I agree with you totally that adoption is theologically important. Well, first, because I'm through experience, I was adopted by believers at the age of 3 months, and my parents have loved me as their own, and they've mirrored the gospel through that. And secondly, I'd like to comment that it's theologically important because, I think that parents should know, they're adopting, they need to know what they're getting themselves into, that they need to love these children that they're adopting unconditionally. In Titus 3, it talks about, it reminds us that we were too one sinfully wicked, hating one another, and God hating everything, and God chose us to love us unconditionally through His Son Jesus Christ, and we just need to be reminded that if we're going to be adopting children, we need to do the same.
Very good statement, John. I really appreciate your call, and it has a particular powerfulness to it, given the fact that you were adopted, and I'm so thankful for your adoptive parents and their faithfulness to you. And as you know, that in its own way is a pointer to an even greater faithfulness, and that's the faithfulness of God who has adopted believers in Christ. Thanks for your call, John. Let's go to Newport Richey, Florida. Diane's listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Diane.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I just wanted to make a comment. We adopted two special needs kids around the same age as this little boy, but a little older. They were 10 and 11. And I just have to say that kids from this type of background, they do some crazy, scary things. And without a strong faith and commitment, you're not going to make it as an adoptive parent, and love is not enough. Love doesn't get you through the times when you just don't know what to do. You've got to have a strong faith, and you've got to be committed. And we know several other parents that adopted around the same time, older kids as well. And quite frankly, all but one failed. They were failed placements. And the thing that differentiated between the successful placements and the ones that failed was a very strong faith and a biblical basis.
Yeah, I appreciate that word too, Diane. And you're making a distinction, by the way. I think that's crucial for us to understand, not a differentiation between the children, but between the parents. And what you describe as a successful adoption took place among parents who had a deep faith and a deep commitment. And I have to believe, Diane, I just have to hope and believe with confidence that Christian parents have a particular faithfulness in adoption precisely because we know what it means to have been saved by grace alone. We know what it means not only to have been helpless orphans, but to have been God's own enemies. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He has adopted us in Christ, adopted us eternally. You know, Diane, your call also reminds me that there may be any number of horrifyingly complex and difficult situations in adoption. And you know, when you start thinking about that, let me just point out the same thing is true for children who are best described as children by blood. I hate to use the word natural because adopted children are not unnatural. They're just not children adopted by, they were not born in terms of a blood relationship to the parents, which makes the adoptive relationship even more precious because it's a more elective relationship, which makes the rejection or the failure of adoption even more tragic. I would not minimize the difficulty that can come in, but the difficulty comes with parenthood. The difficulty doesn't come with adoption. It comes with parenthood. And you, I think, are pointing out that the faith of the parents is so important here, which is another reminder to me right now that my adoption in Christ has nothing to do with how attractive I was to be adopted. Not attractive. I was a sinner. Nor how much I deserved to be adopted. I didn't deserve to be adopted in Christ. I had no claim upon salvation at all. Nothing but the wrath of God that was rightfully directed to my sin. And I'm so thankful that the adoptive God who adopted us in Christ is ever faithful. And his commitment is always unbreakable. His word is always true. And if that were not so, then we would not be saved. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I've had a lot of emails since I published that news story this morning in my commentary. And, you know, it has been generally in two directions. Just to share with you the mail that has come in. A lot of affirmative mail, a lot especially of adoptive children and adoptive parents who have written me to say, thank you so much for saying this. Thank you for underlying this. I've had several church pastors and ministers write and email to say, I think that was a really important word. I want to thank you. That gives me something I can talk about that I need to say on Sunday as I'm thinking about this very issue. And we need to be talking about as a church. I've had some negative mail. And the negative mail has come back to people who say, look, sometimes children just don't work out. And that's where I just have to say, I pull on my hair with a broken heart. That's just not something a parent says. And what happens in adoption is the one becomes parent, mom, dad. It's mom and dad's responsibility to make it work out. And you may need to go get help. And there's a situation where whether the child is yours by adoption or by blood, if you have trouble and you need help, then go find help. But you are mom and you are dad. And you can't just put the kid on a plane and send him back to Russia with a note. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is one of those issues that we just have to talk about. Because we understand that the secular world out there is talking about it, and they're saying many right things. They're saying many true things. Even in this age of moral confusion, isn't it interesting? There seems to be an absolute moral consensus that this was wrong. But it's Christians who know it's wrong for a reason far deeper than the world looking at the situation sees the wrong. Let's talk about it. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Write me by email at mail@albertmuller.com, Twitter/Albert Mueller and Mueller Radio, Facebook, The Albert Mueller Program. Join the discussion. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Again, we'd love you to join the conversation at 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Gene calling from Peoria, Illinois, listening on WPEL. Go ahead, Gene.
Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Mohler, I wanted to respond about this adoption. We adopted a girl at 2 years of age who literally put us through hell with drug abuse, alcohol, prison time, abortions, and it was extremely difficult. But I need to tell you, and all parents out there listening who are going through the same thing, she called about 4 months ago. She is now in her 40s and apologized for all the trouble that she gave us. Asked for forgiveness, and my response to all parents who are going through this, hang in there, because forgiveness comes, and yes, it is given.
Jean, thank you so much for calling and for that word. I want to ask you a direct question, and I would love to hear your response to this. Say you were in the situation of this mom with this little 7-year-old boy, and before she decided to put him on a plane and send him back, she was trying to decide what to do. What would you have advised her to do?
Get help. Go to counseling, go to a Christian counselor, which we did several times. And it took for a while, but yes, she went back to her old ways, and but finally she came out of it, and I had to respond to her, yes, there were times I was angry with you. Yes, there were times I was hurt by you, but never stopped loving you.
That's a tremendous testimony, Jean, and that's why that daughter is always going to know you as Mom. Irrevocable. Thank you for that, Jean. Let's go to St. Petersburg, Florida. Gwen's calling, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Gwen.
Yes, I'm an adoptive mother as well. And you know, my daughter's 22 now. It has not been an easy road. I believe we have a shared faith. I would never try to undo the adoption. However, I wonder what this mother did do to try and find help. And was the child, had it been misrepresented, what the needs of the child would have been, so that they could have decided ahead of time, you know, we are not equipped to deal with the needs of this child. We are not equipped to deal with if it was, quote unquote, a problem child or a mentally ill child or a child with rage. I just wonder about that. I mean, I know friends that have adopted a child from Russia as well, and the child was homicidal towards them.
You know, Gwen, listen, hang with me here, Gwen. Let me tell you. Number one, you've got the credibility to raise some of these issues as an adoptive mom and as an adoptive parent. And I've been waiting for someone to raise the issues the way you did. That was very helpful. And I just want to suggest to you this. The problem in this is not that this may have been an unfair situation for this mom. The child may have been misrepresented to her. And quite frankly, given the ghastly bureaucracy of orphanages in Russia, they may not even have known. It may not have been so much a misrepresentation as the fact that this child had just been a part of this vast orphanage system, and I have no idea. I do know this. The problem here is in assuming that this is different because of adoption. In other words, and let me suggest to you, Gwen, that the issue for me. The issue for me is, let's say this boy had not been adopted. Let's say that he was a child by blood, by natural birth, the way it's most often described in the media. Let's say that this child, we'll call him a child by blood, had the same pathology. If indeed that mother put that boy on that child and sent him to Russia, she'd be in jail right now for child abandonment. I'm just going to suggest to you that adoption's there's the wrong distinction to make here. And you said we don't know, you know, if she tried to get help. We do know that she didn't try to get help by talking to anyone who had any clue this is what she was going to do. And at the very least, I just want to say, Gwen, I think you'd agree with me on this. It's just fundamentally incomprehensible that the right thing to do is to put the boy on a plane alone, sending him back to Russia. And I thank you for calling with all those concerns you raised, which are legitimate, and you have every right to raise them. The issue is, I think at this point we need to say, especially from a Christian perspective, once we become parents, we're parents. And the distinction of a child that is a child, you might say by blood or by adoption, at that point should disappear. And the commitment should be no less. The responsibility should be no less. The status at that point is no different. The moment we decide the status is different, that's when, that means forever we're having a different category in our mind between a child by natural means and a child by adoption. And that, in its very core, I think, is what violates the gospel. The phone number is 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Miller Program. Obviously, this story strikes a nerve. It has internationally in Russia. It has spawned hundreds of responses, news stories, outrage in the streets. Here, it has led to brokenhearted Americans grieving this news story and feeling a national sense of shame that this has happened as it has. And from a Christian perspective, of course, as I'm arguing now and did in my article published earlier today entitled When Adoption Fails, the Gospel is Denied, that the tragedy is greater in dimension and in depth. Let's go to Jan calling from Orlando, Florida, listening on WHIM. Go ahead, Jan.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I have two adopted children, one 12 and one 4, and my little boy who's 4 has spectrum disorder. And just listening to your show, God has placed these children with us as parents, adopted children, that's what I'm referring to, and he brought them to us, and it's our responsibility to do whatever we can to raise them in a godly manner, but also to take care of them and to supply the needs that they need, whether they have a disorder or not. And it's our God-given responsibility as a parent, and we need to search out for help, and that's exactly what we're doing with our little four-year-old. And yes, it's frustrating. It's a difficult thing to go through as a parent, and it's probably the easier way to get rid of them, is well, like this parent did, you know, sending the boy back to Russia. That's not what the Lord wants for us, because he brought these children to us. So I just wanted to make that point.
I appreciate that.
That's how we got our child.
Yeah, thank you for calling, Jan, and may God bless you and your husband in raising these two wonderful children given to you for your care. And I'm very thankful that they are yours. And I mean that in the full strength of the word, yours, and the fact that you claim them as yours. Let's go to Sellersburg, Indiana. Kimberly's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Kimberly.
Oh, hi, Dr. Mueller. This is a topic that really touches close to home for my husband and myself, and I'd like to preface my comments with saying that I do not agree in any way with what this mother did, the choice to send him back on an airplane to a country when he was already an American citizen and she had adopted him. My husband and I adopted two children and then went on to adopt a third child out of birth order. The child that we adopted was 7 years old, and we at the time had a 4- and a 2-year-old at home. And we are Christians. We are adoption advocates. In fact, we currently facilitate an adoption support group in our church. But we found ourselves with a child who had been misrepresented by the orphanage and by the country from where we adopted her. And she came into our home with a host of issues that really jeopardized the safety of our other children. And we found ourselves in a position that no parents want to be in, which was, how do we keep all four children safe? And in consulting with multiple medical professionals and trying to seek out help for her, we found ourselves between a rock and a hard place. Our finances were drained. We had no money left in savings. The therapies and things that were being recommended for her, we could not afford. And we had a child, meanwhile, at home who was raging and attacking our other children and bringing issues in that we really felt ill-equipped to handle. And so we found ourselves in the position of a birth mother in America who makes an adoption plan, someone who loves the child but knows that you cannot provide for that child what they need. And we knew that we could not give this child what she needed to heal. And so what we did was we contacted our agency and we made a plan. We found another suitable Christian family who had experience parenting children with attachment disorder, and we over time transitioned her into their care. And so in our case, it was, I don't call it a failed adoption. I call it a painful, terrible, tragic decision that had to be made, but one that had to be made in order to keep all four kids safe. So it does touch really close to home because I love the Lord, and I don't feel like we were denying the gospel, but rather that we were trying to help this child but also help the other children currently in our home.
Yeah, Kimberly, thank you so much for calling, and I appreciate every word you had to say there. And I just want to make one suggestion to you. Number one, you don't have to prove your commitment to adoption to me. You have those children you have adopted, and you are obviously raising them, and as Christians, raising them in nurture and admonition of the Lord. I understand that. I think the biggest problem here for a Christian is in discussing this boy as if his situation is different because he is adopted. And you said something absolutely crucial, and that is that given an excruciating situation that was more than you could handle, no embarrassment in saying that was more than you could handle inside your home at that point. You said something very interesting. You said you did what a natural mother coming up with an adoption plan would do. Well, you know, I need to say right now, out there listening to this program, are some mothers who had an adoption plan for your children. I want to thank you for not aborting those children. I want to thank you for giving birth to those children. And I want to thank you for loving those children into a loving home. And so, Kimberly, what I would just suggest to you, if you'll just hear me in this, is that the distinction here with this boy is that he was sent back. And you preface by saying that was inexcusable and not what you would do. I'm just going to suggest that what you and your husband did, and I can't speak, I'm not here as a counselor nor as a moral judge, I don't know enough, but I'm just going to suggest that in an excruciating situation, you did in that situation what you probably would have done with a natural born child. And that is what I think we need to point out, is that it's making the distinction there that is the problem. And there are natural born children. And here I am using that term I've tried not to use. It's just unavoidable given this media context. There are children born by blood who are also more than some parents can handle, and who also have deep pathologies that bring violence into the home that have to be dealt with. And there are some natural born children who cannot live in the home into which they were born as much as their parents love them and want them to. And so I think that's the distinction I'm trying to fight here, Kimberly. I think you can understand that, is with the distinction that somehow with an adopted child, there's a contingent responsibility. And in this case, what we have is just tragedy upon tragedy. Thanks for your call, Kimberly. We're running out of time for more callers, but this is obviously a topic that we're going to need to think about for some time. I want to talk to you about a couple of resources I think will be helpful to you. My guest host on this program very frequently is Russell D. Moore. He has written an outstanding book. I link to it at my website at albertmiller.com in the article published today. It is entitled Adopted for Life, The Priority of Adoption for Christian Families and Churches. It is one of those rare books that I find just absolutely incredible at every level in terms of the argument it makes, in terms of the biblical data, just a wonderful biblical theology, not only of adoption, but of salvation writ large that he presents in this book. But it's also very emotionally touching from a man who will tell you right up front and write joyously in this book about two little boys that he adopted. He and his wife, Maria, adopted from an orphanage in Russia. There are other resources out there. And if you are an adoptive parent right now, no, let me not talk that way. If you are a parent right now with a troubled child in your home, seek the right kind of help. Don't deny that the child is your child. God has given you a responsibility which is yours. But as you need help, that responsibility may be to go get the right kind of help. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. We'll continue the discussion about adoption and what it means as we're continuing to track the story of this little boy sent back to Russia. The news is now that the U.S. State Department considers this child an American citizen. I don't know exactly what that's going to mean in terms of international relations with this boy. The word out of Russia is that he has been put into foster care until there can be an adequate determination of all that may be involved with him. Folks, earlier this week, I sent out a tweet about something that I think is a compelling story I want you to know about. You know the little monkey stories, Curious George. Well, I did not know the background of this story until I read a fascinating article in the Wall Street Journal about Curious George and how he came to be. And it's based upon an exhibition at the Jewish Museum in New York that is going on now through the 1st of August. It turns out that there's a fascinating story to Curious George. Those who are behind it, Margaret and H.A. Ray, were Jews who had to flee Hitler. The German-born Jewish Rays had to flee Paris, their adopted home. They got away mere hours before the Nazis marched into the city. He had fought for his country during World War I, but they had to flee, and they left going to from France to Spain, to Portugal, to Brazil, and eventually to New York. They traveled by bicycle, train, ship, and by grit. They also had developed a story about a little monkey. The monkey was a French monkey whose name was Fifi. But by the time he got to America, he was Curious George, a little boy monkey with an American name. Here's what touches me, and this is what has so much to do, I think, with the topic we were just discussing. Here you had these two people who fled Hitler's repression and came to the United States, their adopted country. They changed the little monkey that they had written stories about named Fifi in Paris into a little American boy. And this is what's really interesting. They put him on an American bicycle. They put him in American clothes, and they had him do what they believed, as they came to this new country, American little boys would do. If it was an American monkey. I just found that really, really interesting. The art and the narrative, the stories behind it was very interesting. This is a misbehaving little boy, because one of the things the Rays noticed about American children when they came over during World War II is that they weren't quite as orderly and as well-behaved, they thought, as the French children. Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that Curious George has earned his way into the hearts of Americans, even if many parents have to point out that George's behavior is simply not acceptable. The little monkey lived out the fantasies of the couple who came to America and embraced this country as a haven of freedom. I don't know. That kind of story really touches me. And when I look at a book like Curious George, I now look at it in a whole new light. Hard to imagine those stories about a little girl monkey named Fifi. Back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.